This is GM Authority Weekly, episode 66, recorded on May 18th, 2011. The Shorter Show. GM Authority Weekly is brought to you by the GM Authority News Desk. For the latest independent General Motors news, analysis, and a whole lot more, visit GMAuthority.com. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for GM Authority Weekly in the iTunes Store. It's time for GM Authority Weekly, the show that covers the General Motors universe and a whole lot more. From Colorado Springs, Colorado, I'm Alex Luft, and I'm joined by my regular panel of GM Authority co-hosts, starting with GM Authority Editor-in-Chief, who is, of course, coming to us from Detroit, Manoli Katakis. Good evening.
Hey, I hope you're having better weather than I am, because we just went from literally, like, November to Florida weather, like in the, but like not the good Florida weather, like the rainy, humid, nasty Florida weather, in like a span of like 2-3 days.
Well, it's raining here in Colorado, and it's been raining this, or in Colorado Springs at least, and it's been raining the whole week.
40 degrees, man. It's almost June, and it was like 40 degrees the other day, and now it's like creeping back up to, you know, 65 degrees, but it's like, you know, just 100% humidity is just fog, the humid, nasty, ugh. Weather does not sit. Just does not sit well with me.
No. How about you, Hilton? Of course, on the line from Ontario, Canada, GM Authority Opinion Desk writer and Camaro extraordinaire, Hilton Jorson. How's the weather over there?
It's no better than Michigan. Crappy, crappy weather. It's probably one of the worst springs we've had in, you know, over a decade, I would say. Not too many, you know, really nice, warm, sunny days. So, you know, here in Ottawa, you know, they're famous for tulips in the spring, and, you know, the tulips are about a month
late.
Yeah, so, you know, that just tells you right there how bad the weather's been. So hopefully, you know, things will start clearing up.
Well,
crappy spring hopefully makes for a fantastic summer.
Right. You know, on a more positive note, what you could take away from that colder weather is, you know, better engine coolant air for your car, for your Camaro, or, you know,
But then on the negative side, it's you know, your rear tires can't
that's right. So I guess it's a tit for tat.
Well, right. I heard that the colder the temperature on, say, the tarmac, the more grippier the road is. The colder the temperature, the grippier the road.
I don't
know if that's just like a wives' tale.
Yeah, I think it is a wives' tale, because it doesn't make really sense. The asphalt would then be harder, right?
Yeah. But you need warm tires. Yeah, you need warm tires to effectively grip.
Yeah.
So you just put them in the microwave for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, microwave them. Or you could be like Formula One. You ever see like those tire warmer wraps that they have?
Yeah.
I did. Those are pretty sweet.
Yeah, man.
They're like $5,000 each, but.
They probably cost like an arm and a leg.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not something that I would buy for my Chevy Cruze. Although I am looking more and more, Hilton, as I was telling you before we started, I am looking more and more into this handheld tuner device for the Cruze.
Do they have an SCCA like race club where you're at in Colorado Springs?
You know, I haven't looked. But I won't have a car to take there anyway. I mean, what?
Well, I'll take the Cruze there? Yeah, man, hand tune your Cruze.
It's a lease. I'm afraid, you know. Hilton even, you know, kind of told me that you kind of void the warranty on the, you know, even if you do that.
Anybody who gets a tune on their GM vehicle, mm-hmm. and when we say tune, for the old schoolers, it doesn't mean, you know, wrenches. It means messing with the computer.
Right.
Anybody who messes with the computer, you're going to automatically void the warranty.
But my question is there a way to erase that fact that you messed with it?
I've heard that people buy an extra ECM from a rack
and play with that. Replace it. Okay.
Replace.
Well, you swap them, no?
Just like much like swapping out a hard drive.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
It's the same sort of deal. If you do that, you might get away with it. But even though there is technically a way for them to know, and I won't say how, but
who's looking? Who's looking anyway? I mean, if there is a way to know, but who's checking?
Pretty sure the guys.
Well, you know what? Every time that a GM customer comes in with engine work or engine problems, they go to the ECM to check whether it's been messed with or not. So even if you put your own tune into the car, mess around with it, motor goes or a lifter goes, and then you want to reprogram it to the stock tune, you put the stock tune in, they can still detect that you've messed with it.
Damn.
So...
So is that your idea go out the window now, Alex, for the hand tune?
Well, kind of, but I'm going to keep looking because I have some buddies in the biz, if you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, if you do hand tune it, you might as well just join the SCCA club. I do hear that you may get like an insurance discount if you do.
Really?
Yeah, that's like one of the things that at least the local Detroit branch is touting.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I would join the club, but frankly, my sloshy G6 just won't cut it.
Well, you know what else I heard when I was at the Main Street Motion event here in Denver?
Mm-hmm.
The folks at OnStar in the OnStar booth told me that it's possible to get a discount on your insurance if you have OnStar. So, of course, I jumped at the opportunity and checked with Allstate, and Allstate doesn't believe in that.
You're not in good hands.
No, apparently not. Even though OnStar is, I consider them very good hands, from my experience with them at least.
OnStar or Allstate?
OnStar.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't had much experience with Allstate yet, but, I mean, you know, they're I guess I'm in good hands anyway, so.
They have that very deep-voiced black man telling you.
Yeah, the one who was in 24 and then he was in the unit.
Yeah, wasn't he the president?
He was the president.
Yep. And then his brother was the president.
He was Barack Obama before Obama.
That's right. On that note, let's get to the news of the week. Let's talk a little bit Alpha, Manoli.
Yeah, let's talk some Alpha. I mean,
Alpha.
Alpha. Yeah, sorry, I'm getting a little tongue tied here, but we do like to talk about the latest Cadillac rumors. There seems to be one like every week, but this one apparently is not so much a rumor. It's more of a report that's been hitting the interwebs just recently, and I guess the Alpha might be facing some serious weight issues. And that totally goes against what we've been hearing initially. When you look at the quote from Carl Straka, he was telling everybody that the Cadillac ATS with the Alpha platform will beat BMW in unsprung mass, all sorts of things like that, and frankly, it's not seeming to be the case now, and a lot of it has to do with all the additions that they've been adding to the platform. And fun fact, the Alpha platform is actually a derivative. At one point, it was a derivative of the Kappa 2 platform.
Right.
You guys remember that's what underpinned the
Solstice and the Sky.
Yeah, Solstice, the Sky, was it the Opel GT?
Yep.
I believe. And it's really skewed far and away from its original purpose as basically the next generation of a lightweight rear-wheel drive chassis that was only meant to cradle four-cylinder engines. But now it's obviously turned into something a lot more multi-role for going to be something that's going to be able to cradle up to 4, 6, even 8-cylinder engines, have all-wheel drive, could stretch up to, a full-size vehicle length. And all that extra upgrades really put on a lot of weight for the platform, made it more expensive to develop, and the speculation is that it could be as heavy as 500 extra, as much as 500 extra pounds have been added to the platform from what they originally wanted. And we could see Alpha-based products such as the ATS, which, mind you, is going to be a 3-series fighter, a compact car, might be as much as 4,000 pounds.
Man, that's a heavy hippo.
That's a heavy-ass car, especially when you consider that the the basic 328i from BMW weighs in at 3,362 pounds. And, and I'm not saying that the BMW is light by any means, but then again, I mean, there are certain things to justify its weight. Mm-hmm. But 4,000 pounds is just, that's absolutely
ridiculous. 700 pounds more. I mean,
that's
So here's my question. Obviously, this is according to reports and according to certain sources, and you know, say what you will about reports and those sources.
But, rumors and speculation.
Right.
Things.
Here's my question. I mean, Manolo, you brought up the point that Carl Straka, you know, pretty much made it his, you know, made it a goal, but he kind of came out and said that Caddy will beat BMW in unsprung mass, which mm-hmm. is pretty much the platform weight, you know, the weight of the vehicle without, you know, rolling stock. But
right.
here's my question. I mean, so if BMW can do this with a 3 Series, 5 Series, 7, 6 Series even, all those vehicles are on the same platform, but it's a modular platform. So just like the Alpha, you know, compact, midsize, full-size vehicles, even their CUVs, the X3, the X5, the X6, those are based on derivatives of those of that same platform as well. Why can BMW do it, and why can't GM do it the same way?
Maybe that's why...
BMW?
Well, that and maybe that's why GM engineers are taking apart BMW 3 Series and figuring out how they do it.
As we speak.
right. Yeah, they're just like, oh, crap, you know.
What the hell is that? They're putting this.
The biggest problem now is that whatever the weight is, it's just it's way too late to just cancel everything and go back. You got the ATS already in Iver. Mm-hmm. It's going to launch next year. And there's, I mean, honestly, by now they're just putting on the finishing touches. If anything, we could see maybe some chassis tuning or weight reduction or something along those lines rather than doing it right and fixing it like they're supposed to.
Well, I know a way that they can shave off at least 20 pounds off of the car.
How's that?
They can use the Cruise Eco wheels.
But if this chassis is truly getting upgraded to allow them to use it on a multi-platform basis, then you know it's all for good in the long run. But you know, what does that mean? Does it mean that how customizable is it or applicable to different models right. is it going to be
I think in the long run, like you said, they'll be able to improve on this. This is kind of their first take on this multi-platform.
Okay, so is it, you know, like, for example, effort. The Camaro is supposed to go to this platform. So right. is it worthwhile going to this platform if it's even going to be heavier?
Well, I think from a cost perspective, it's worthwhile. And I don't think it's going to be heavier than the current Zeta, because as we know, the current Zeta under the Camaro is pretty heavy itself.
Well, the Sigma and the Zeta are both already, I mean, they're heavy rear-wheel drive platforms, but You seem to be gaining nothing from switching to Alpha.
Well, except for maybe economies of scale by, you know, for the business perspective.
Right. But then again, we've seen a Sigma SUV before. What good is the Alpha that basically the Sigma couldn't do? And if it's supposed to be some sort of new modern thing, some lightweight thing, it's turning out to be not so.
I mean, 3,300 pounds versus 4,000.
That's a big
in
difference.
In the car world, it's huge
difference.
Yeah, it is.
That's like basically, well, that's a full. If you had a car that weighed 3,300 pounds and you filled it with four passengers, right there, 4,000 pounds, and then you're gonna go take that car to the track and compare it to something that is unladen. I mean, that's ridiculous. And are they even gonna have the engine power to back it up? And if they do have that
to
kind
compensate.
Of engine. To compensate, and with that extra power, you're going to lose the fuel economy. With the weight, you're going to lose fuel economy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, in terms of the upcoming CAFE regulations, you know, BMW is that much farther ahead now.
Well, they have that electric effort going.
Yeah, you have their new i-line coming.
Yeah, who's running that?
Frank Weber.
Right. Well, I think only time will tell here, as we like to say, but
yeah,
I still, in the back of my head, I don't want to believe this. You know,
yeah, I have faith.
Right. I think that
there's no way it could be such a colossal bust.
Well, and here's the thing. We care about this. Okay. Like I understand that we talk about this stuff on a daily basis. We live, breathe, and eat this stuff. Right. But the regular consumer who buys a 3 Series, someone who buys a 5 Series, will they notice? Will they care? I mean, obviously, you'll see the difference in maybe the fuel economy, the fuel economy ratings. Maybe you'll see it in 0 to 60 times. You know, maybe it'll be a bit slower and a bit have inferior fuel economy. But from when they drive them, will they care?
No. Vast majority will not care.
Because the vast majority, again, are not enthusiasts. But
right. Well, I think the BMW crowd is more of an enthusiast than, say, a Lexus.
But even
crowd.
At that, I mean, you know what?
I think the BMW crowd, all the enthusiasts have moved to Audis.
That's but even at that, I think most of the BMW crowd are, it's to put the car in the driveway and so the neighbors can see what you're driving or your colleagues can see what you're driving more than, the performance guys.
Right.
I mean, there are a lot of them, but,
With BMW, again, like all you pretty much have there is the history and the badging. Let's face it. The cars inside and out. Are not the
but
best.
But they drive like a dream.
Well, yeah, they drive. No,
and no Audi can ever compare to how a 3 Series drives.
Let's not go there. But I just wanted to say, the engineering and driving aside, because I thought we were talking about just the basic driver, your everyday consumer. Mm-hmm. You're going to park that in front of the driveway. Then you look at the 3 Series, and then from renderings and stuff that we expect what the ATS will look like. I would say the ATS is already shaping to be a better looking car. Not that it's hard to beat the BMW's looks.
Yeah.
It's not that good looking.
Yeah, the BMW is kind of an acquired taste. It's funny. No. When the 3 Series, the current generation 3 Series came out, I hated it. And now, the more I see it on the road, I'm really starting to like it. And it's not like it's pretty. It's not pretty at all. Don't get me wrong. It's just there's something that you kind of learn to love it. But now when you learn to love it, you really adore it.
I think the new 5 Series is pretty.
Yeah, I like it. I like the new 5.
I like the new 5 Series a lot.
But I just find the 3 Series more about status than anything else.
Yeah.
Well, even that compared to like a C-Class. Which one would you take?
I just think like, Cadillac's still got a lot of work ahead of them to get into the same level. As BMW or any of the German companies. Well, yeah,
And here's the thing too, is like if the ATS is gonna be that overweight, why didn't say the guys like the knot hole guys, why didn't they step in or any of these chief engineers or any of these things that like these guys that are supposed to be proud of their job, supposed to like evangelize their projects.
Well, here's my question. I mean, we're comparing these vehicles right now to the last generation 3 Series, the last generation C-Class. I mean, the current generation, right?
Well,
do we know that the next gen are going to be heavier? Lighter?
I don't know, man. Well, I wouldn't put them as – if they do gain weight, I'm not going to put them as gaining much weight. And if you think about it, they're gonna learn a whole bunch of different engineering techniques like – that are coming forward to save weight yet keep up with safety, keep up with performance and all sorts of things. And a lot of it maybe just has to do with interior materials, using more composites, using more carbon fiber where you can, stuff like that. But
is this platform going to be used by the next generation Holden Commodore?
That is a very good question.
that's something that we, no one really knows yet.
I think so too.
But that's probably gonna upset a lot of the engineers at Holden because the Zeta platform, that's their baby.
Right.
That's their.
At that point, it does not make sense to make one car that sells about 50,000 units a year
on one platform.
Right.
Well, then at that point, it's also the fact that if it's an older platform, it's gonna be cheaper to make.
Yeah, I mean, they could stick with the current one and see how they do, but you know, then again, the whole point of, and we've had this conversation before, but the whole point of having a, you know, a car that you sell and develop globally is you can dump a whole bunch of resources at it because you're going to make more back from it, you know, on a global level.
Well, then you also have the new Malibu coming in to Australia.
To Australia, right.
Yeah,
it's, and it's the same model. Size. It's got more interior room than the Commodore.
Well, that, and it's gonna replace the Epica. But let's face it, if you had to choose between the Epica and a Commodore, which one would you pick? It's a pretty
well.
Easy
the
question.
Epica is not even a car. I mean, that's like a dialogue.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's a piece of. I mean, so seriously, right there, if you had to choose between the Epica and a Commodore, you already know what you're gonna pick.
Well, what if you choose between the Malibu and the Commodore?
Exactly. If you're choosing between a Malibu and a Commodore, now I bet you the Australian consumers might be having a little bit more complicated of a question to answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still think that the. It's funny because, you know, the Commodore is the best-selling vehicle in Australia.
That's because it's probably the best. It's the best vehicle in Australia.
Maybe, but I mean, the Falcon is pretty good. I've never driven it, but at least from what I hear, it's pretty good.
Well, and it's the chief rival of the.
That's right, the Commodore. Yep.
So.
Well,
so you have that.
We'll see. Only time will tell, as we like to say, on this show and. In person as well.
I know that, you know, the next generation Camaro, if it's going to be, you know, it's supposed to use the same platform, and if it comes in roughly 100 pounds plus or minus what it is now, people are going to be screaming.
Yeah, they're going to be pissed because they're already complaining that the Zeta, that the Camaro is too heavy.
Exactly.
Especially the guys who buy the Mustang over the Camaro.
They'll
keep laughing.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Mustang is, and even with its fixed rear axle, handles better than the Camaro does.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they've done a lot of stuff to that rear axle to, you know, to bring it up to the 21st century or into the 21st century. But nevertheless, let's move on. Let's talk about something that is not as cool and exciting.
The opposite of Alpha.
Right.
The opposite of sports cars.
Volt.
The Volt.
So there's an estimate floating around that
it's a KBB estimate,
right? So you got to know that, you know, those guys are right.
Yeah, they're pretty accurate about this stuff. Yeah, after 36 months,
for 36 months,
its value has decreased all the way to $17,000.
Okay,
that is like, I mean, that's a shocker. That's a three-year-old car, and it's already less than half of its value.
I don't see that as being that bad.
What?
I don't think it's that bad.
If you take your credits into account, isn't that about $5,000 a year?
Yep.
So
15.
Alex, I bet you your cruise when it's 3 years old. Well, how much is it now? Like an $18,000.
I bought it for 23.
All right, so 23. It'll probably sell for 17 or 18.
No way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You know why?
I'll give you an example.
There's going to be a demand. There's going to be a demand for the cruise. Maybe. Still, it's going to be high because a lot of it has to do with gas prices. But I want and KBB even claims that the reason that the value of the Volt will drop so drastically in those 3 years is because of cars like the cruise of. Compact cars and subcompact cars that aren't hybrids, aren't electric vehicles, but are still fuel efficient, and that's where the demand is because people, they understand how they work. They don't have to, you know, it's a familiar territory.
Well, let me give you an example. The car that I was considering buying before someone so ineloquently snatched it out from underneath my nose was the Saturn Astra XR. All right, it was a 2008 model, so I was buying it in the beginning of 2011. This car originally stickered for $22,800. All right, that was its original price.
You're kidding.
Nope. So $22,800 for a Saturn Astra XR. It was loaded, you know, leather, everything, OnStar, of course. Okay. But $22,800, and they were asking. This is of course a dealer that obviously needed to have its markup there and et cetera, et cetera. They were asking $12,000. So
a decrease of $10,000,
right? So I don't see it as being that bad, and it's
but maybe Saturn's not a good example because it is
right. It was going away. It is going away. But then again, these unique cars like the Astra, especially the XR, you know, especially in stick, they tend to hold their value, you know, because it's a unique car. There's a unique buyer for it, and the buyer will be found eventually.
Have you seen any Chevy Cobalts at the dealers at the used car lots lately?
I can't say I have. No, I haven't actually at all. I kind of I probably have seen them, but I kind of just walked by.
How about Civic, Corolla, anything you haven't like noticed?
No,
that, like,
I haven't looked at all. All
right, well, next time give it a look, because this could really
I'll give it a look tomorrow.
Yeah, give it a look tomorrow. But I don't know. I've got a theory that even though what KBB is saying is that it has a lot to do with compact, fuel-efficient cars, mm-hmm. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it's an electric car. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, the life expectancy of even like cars like the Prius, like they're not expected to go past 100,000 miles until you have to replace that battery. And the Volt, even though it comes with an 8-year, 100,000-mile battery warranty, mm-hmm. I mean, who knows what's going to happen at maybe 115,000 miles.
Right. Yeah, and then you're down $3,000-$4,000 for that battery.
Then you're down $3,000-$4,000 just to replace it. And that's the thing, too, that'll be maybe three years from now.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. The fact that, the Volt is currently offered as a lease, right, for 3 years. Mm-hmm. But the person who's going to get it after that lease is going to buy it.
He's going to buy it, and he's going to have to replace that battery.
Right, exactly. So you're taking in kind of an additional risk. It's not the same as buying a gasoline-powered car.
If it does sell for 17, I don't know what the mileage would be, but that person would be getting, I think, more value mm-hmm. than the person who buys a cash brand new.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. Theoretically, if assume that it's lost half its value in terms of what the person paid for it, the original purchaser paid for it. You're going to get a lot more than 3 years out of it at 17,000. So, the guy before bought it new. He got for 3 years, he paid roughly $15,000 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how many years are you going to get when you pay 17,000? More than three, I say.
Right.
More than three, but you would have to install at least the new battery and things like that.
Yeah, but I mean, it depends on the mileage, but there's no different from after 4 years, taken to the scrapyard, because that's what the guy in the first year did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking through my cruise contract right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to look up the mileage that I have on this thing. I know I got the highest mileage. I got like crazy mileage in the year. Let me keep going.
You it would be a good gauge for really figuring out like where these estimates are coming from is when they actually put in a residual estimate on the Nissan Leaf, which is all electric.
Yeah, that would be nice, huh?
Well, it's coming. They're working on the estimation. I guess it's going to come out later this year. So, if after 36 months, if the Nissan Leaf is like a third of the price as it originally was, it has a lot to do with the fact that it's an electric car.
Well, see, I think that the difference there is going to be that the Leaf is, the Leaf has this one single technology. It's powered by the battery. We all know how it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, how many copycat vehicles are going to be released by that time in 3 years?
3 years
just
from
like
now?
The Leaf. You're going to have the Focus electric, just like the Leaf. And it's not going to look just as goofy as the Leaf. It's going to look better. You're going to have all these copycat cars. I think Toyota is going to have a pure electric Prius. Or
you're going to have the Mitsubishi iMiEV.
Well, that doesn't count. but you know what I'm saying? There's going to be a lot of copycat cars, whereas the Volt's going to sit by itself in a class by itself. Maybe the Ford C-Max Energi is going to be the only one that's going to compete with it, since the Energi is going to be the plug-in version of the C-Max. But, we'll see. I guess that's pretty much all we can say at this point. Let's talk about the Cruise, since we're talking about fuel economy. 38 miles per gallon highway for the 2012 Chevy Cruise, the non-eco model.
Right. Yeah, with the automatic.
With the automatic, that's right.
With the automatic and the 1.4.
This pisses me off to no avail. Because now the 2012 is going to get, not only is it going to get this fuel economy bump, but because, Manny, why is this happening? Because of what?
Because of gas prices?
No, they're doing this, how?
they're increasing this.
Oh, it's they're just doing it through gear ratios.
Right.
It's just a little tune.
Uh-huh. So not only is it going to have this, but it's also going to have the, you know, optional keyless entry, the push button start, the touchscreen navigation, you know, different armrest detent. So,
well, if you ask me, Alex, this is all the stuff that they should have came out at launch last year.
Right. Exactly.
So, I don't know. Boo on you for actually getting.
Well, I needed a car.
Getting one of the first year it's been out.
Yeah, I needed a car. I guess that's the price I pay for being an early adopter and helping GM and, you know, get the cruise up to second market share.
Yeah, but they're always going to do that. You know, the next year it's always going to be better than the last. I mean, even with my Camaro, if I ordered it today, I would get above what I have now. I would get the rear sensors. I would get the windshield display.
Right. The projector. Yeah.
Yeah, and
you'd also get the OnStar MyLink.
That's right. So, you know, and yeah, it would be a little bit more pricier, but still, they're always going to improve the car. I mean, 2012, there's a lot of new options coming in, including new steering wheel, new instrument panel. So, you know, they're always looking to improve the cars. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the guy who buys the 2012 Cruze is going to be cursing at the guy who buys 2013. It's never going to end.
Yeah, because the 2013 is going to have a diesel.
By that time, yeah. I'm going to have a Camaro. That's all I got to say about that.
As long as they're four-cylinder diesels, do not sound like trucks.
They don't. Well, and here's the thing, too, is that a lot of people, the myth is that diesel engines, and if GM was to sell a diesel engine in America, it'd be so expensive that people wouldn't want to buy it anyway, or any OEM for that matter.
Well, that's the old wives' tale.
The wives' tale is that, because when you look at the heavy duty trucks, is the heavy duty trucks with their $9,000 engine and transmission combo in the GMC 3500 HD, whatever. Uh-huh, uh-huh. It has a lot to do with all these requirements they have to make, the urea thing and all the, you know, what's it called? The DEF, diesel exhaust fluid. Yeah, it's just, and all these emission standards and it's just, it gets a little ridiculous. And you don't have to worry about that in the four-cylinder diesels.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the sulfur levels are low enough where they don't have to worry.
Right. You don't have that urea thing. You don't have the DEF stuff.
You're not going to have to worry about filling your four-cylinder diesel Cruze up with DEF when it, you know,
that
comes
would be kind of funny, though.
That would suck, dude.
Well, I think a lot of, you know, I think one of the biggest reasons is, you know, these automotive companies just had this belief that, you know, Americans were not prepared to drive diesel cars. And, you know, I think in recent years, we've been screaming. I mean, there's lots of Americans that are, you know, it's just saying, why? Why not? You know,
a lot of those Americans, I don't know if they're screaming so much about having a small diesel car as much as they are about a small diesel truck.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That's small an interesting, diesel. Interesting distinction there.
Well, you know, and that's where the foreign companies have a strong, like very strong history in. You know, all these small trucks are all diesels in Africa and South America. And
well, even in anywhere else in the world, even in the Cruze, you can get a Cruze diesel in Europe or in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's just here. Oh, but another fun fact before we move on, this 38 MPG rating is better than what we already see from the Cruze Eco with the automatic.
Wow.
So that can mean one of two things. It's either the Cruze Eco is going to go away with the automatic, or they're going to tune it to get better, you know, to get Cruze something like 40.
Yeah, maybe something like 40. I would like to see that, because right now, even initially, when you look at the Cruze Eco with the automatic, there's really 1 mile per gallon. That's it. That's the only improvement you see. And I don't know how.
And you're sacrificing a 60-40 split. You know, seat back there.
60-40
No Z Link suspension.
Yeah, no Z Link.
No Pioneer sound system.
And I forget how much extra you have to pay for it.
Yeah, something like a grand and a half, I think.
Yeah, it's stupid. If you're gonna get a Cruze Eco, get the manual. Learn how to drive stick.
And it's a beautifully shifting manual too.
When I had the Cruzeco, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And if I could, I would have it for the rest of my life because I would put this as like your best everyday commuter car. If it had a hatch, then it would be the best everyday commuter car. Because it doesn't have a hatch. It's not because honestly, like if only Cruzeco hatch, just think about it, man. 42 miles per gallon, all that cargo space. You could do anything with it. You could go to Timbuktu and back on a tank of gas. You know, it's
yep. That's true.
Yeah, GM's really missing out there.
Hey, what about that $10 million tax break that GM is not missing out on?
Yeah, well, I guess they got a $130 million project going on in the for the Warren Tech Center just to build a new IT facility.
Hmm.
Yep. And it's going to create, they say, 25 permanent jobs. Basically, it's just going to be a whole bunch of computer nerds looking at a computer screen. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. And it's going to occupy, yeah, like 30 acres of land or so. Whole bunch of stuff like that. And, yeah, 10 million in...
See, those are the guys who determine the gearing ratios right there, right? They analyze the gearing ratios and they say, well, if we can boost the, you know, the sprockets in 6x9.
I wonder what all those IT guys are going to do, really.
I'm telling you, they're going to analyze the data.
Maybe they're going to probe everybody.
So making sure. So you wish.
I think GM should be counting their lucky stars because they're basically getting $400,000 per job that they create. That's what that $10 million
right there. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So.
And again, lucky I think, it also has a lot to do with the overall political structure and in that sector of Michigan in Warren, where the mayor and everything they're very business friendly.
Right. These engineers, these people are gonna these employees are gonna obviously spend their on whatever they're gonna pay taxes, et cetera. They're gonna boost local businesses. So in the long run, I think it will pay off.
Well, they say that. I don't know if it's salaried or hourly, but according to the Detroit News, they have it listed at $44 an hour. And that data, I guess they're getting from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation.
Right. Well, here's, I think, the bigger question. Obviously with GM, Ford, somewhat Chrysler being in the Michigan area, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have, or you've always had this population of engineers now. That cars and automotive engineering in general, now that you start to move into stuff like OnStar and real, telematics,
mm-hmm.
that requires a lot of these IT programmers or computer programmers, I should say. I think it could be something of value to create this tech center, this high-tech, non-engineering, non-automotive engineering, I should say, tech center in the area. Then that could potentially bring in, I don't know how much further this needs to happen, how much further it's away, but it could potentially bring in, programmers from other areas, from San Francisco, from Silicon Valley, and then slowly...
From New Delhi?
Maybe. But then slowly and surely, you're going to get the, you're going to kind of create a culture there, and that culture may eventually spread to become something that's, that Michigan and Detroit can take advantage of.
More hipster techie drones. I cannot wait.
Let's take a quick break so Manoli can figure out how much longer wait.
Before we take a quick break, do this math for a second.
Okay.
All right. We have this is they say it's going to be part of GM's $2 billion nationwide plan. All right. This is $130 million right here. You have another $131 million in Bowling Green, $204 million in Toledo, and then was it $417 million?
Yep.
Allegedly
for the going Flint. Yep.
For what they got as information as a paint facility, I don't know what the hell. I think I something about that just doesn't smell.
I got three words for it, maybe two, depending on how you spell it. Magical smell. Fairy dust.
Well, I was gonna say something. I just said smell bullshit. That's all.
Well, I want the building contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can hook our buddy up, Larry Miller, with that as well.
Does a new paint facility?
I think there is more to that than meets the eye.
definitely. I mean, to me, that sounds like a whole nother, like a dish, like a, an addition to a line.
Right. Well, either that or they may be replacing, you know, the components that come or the parts in the production line that come before and or after this paint shop. You know, so maybe the conveyor belt or whatever takes these bodies.
Well, 417 million.
You know, yeah, it may be a long-term thing. Maybe they're upgrading to the latest and greatest technology that nobody else has. I mean, I don't know.
Paint.
Yeah.
For paint.
Paint's important. Doesn't rust or something like that. Right? I mean, if you can paint it well, it's not going to rust. Hey, guys, thanks for being here, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're trying out something new on this show. A few of you have written in and said that, you know, you want a shorter show. So we're giving you a show that's about 40 minutes long in this case to see, you know, to get some feedback. Do you like a shorter format? Do you want the longer show to stick around? What do you like? What would you like? What would you like us to do? So if you could just throw us some feedback either by leaving a comment on the post for this podcast, which, of course, you can find at weekly.gmauthority.com. Or by sending us an email to podcast@gmauthority.com or calling us at 313-355-3GMA. That's 313-355-3GMA. And as we do at the end of every show, we'd like to welcome GM employees of any caliber and any position on the GM Authority Weekly Show. So if you're listening and you'd like to be on the show, you know, just kind of discuss the news, discuss some GM products, and do some analysis along the way. You can join us. You're very welcome to join us. All we ask is that you have, you know, a good internet connection or maybe even a phone line that we can call you on. And the invitation right now is not limited to only Bob Lutz. So if you'd like to come on the show and kick it with us, do let us know. And we'll get you in. Again, you can write into podcast@gmauthority.com or shoot us a voicemail at 313-355-3GMA. Follow us on Facebook or fan us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter is the more correct terminology in that case. And of course, don't forget to leave a review in the iTunes store. We really appreciate those, so keep those rolling in. We like what we see, and this is one of the reasons why we are actually doing a shorter show today based on some feedback in the iTunes store. And I think that's all I've got, because the general has been served. Please rate the show in the iTunes store, head on over to iTunes, and search for GM Authority Weekly.